6 minutes after the hour. Welcome back, Truth Seekers, to your Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow occupying your public airwaves from the left coast here, broadcasting once more tonight and tomorrow, leading up to Thanksgiving, and Mike Malloy will be back next week. Please stop on by our bradblog.com chat room, where we'd love to see you there. You can also tweet me at the Bradblog, but if you go to bradblog.com, you'll see a bunch of folks in there all having a good time. Click through that very first item. It's easy to find. If you can't find it, then nobody really wants to talk to you in that chat room anyway, because you're just too dumb. No, you're not. Come on by. We'd love to see you. Tonight's broadcast and tomorrow's is sponsored in no small part by Richard Averitt, the author of Imagine Politique, American Democracy, Politics in Crisis, political thriller, which Ernie Canning of Brad Blog says has an explosive ending that makes this a must-read. It offers a fundamental argument against compromising of the core principles of democratic governance. And if that isn't enough to make you interested in this book kicks off with a three-way race, by the way, between a Republican, a Democrat, and an independent progressive running for president of the United States. Not to give too much away, but the independent progressive is announced the winner on election night. Until this guy, well, here's the way Ernie Canning wrote about it in his review of the book. We find the fictional Zach Barrett confronted with ethical dilemmas, such as when he learns from a fictional Brad Friedman that there is a distinct possibility of vote flipping on Georgia's 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems, which may have given the state to the GOP candidate. Interested yet? Check out this book. Go to bradblog.com. Richard Averitt is allowing us to sell these as a premium. He will be signing the books. We'll be sending them out to you in time for Christmas, in time for your right-wing brother-in-law who may need to read a book like this. Oh, and you do too. So you'll see the link right at the top of Brad Blog for this book. Please buy it. Help out progressive media, progressive radio, progressive blogging, and all of that. We're going to be joined a little bit later in this hour by Jeannie Dean, one of the occupiers at Occupy LA. An interesting turn of events happened there today. You know, they've been ignoring Occupy LA in the news. Why? Because they're getting along with everybody, because the city council passed a resolution pretty much days after the occupation set up on the lawn outside of City Hall in support of the occupiers, in support of Occupy Wall Street. So there haven't been the violent confrontations, so nobody's paying attention to them. However, some new news today may change things a little bit, so we'll be talking about that at the bottom of the hour. I should note the GOP presidential candidates have just finished facing off in Washington, D.C. A very, very important debate. It is, I think, the 37th Republican debate this year. No doubt they'll have everything worked out tonight. Tony was kind enough to put together some of the highlights from the just completed debate. I think he's got that. Do you have some of those here, the highlights, some from that. That's completely, well, that would have been an entertaining debate had we seen that, but no, that wasn't it. Our mistake. Once again, we apologize for that broadcasting error. We'll make sure that does not happen again. All right. Well, I got somebody on the phone here. I didn't even ask for calls, because I got a lot of stuff to get to. But somebody calling in from Seattle, from Occupy Seattle, with a note here from the call screener. Mike asked him to call in. I guess that's Mike Malloy. Now, it's a pretty good trick if that's the case. Oh, wait, I can't go to Mike because I got Howie. Oh, hang on here. Okay, we got Howie. I didn't know that. Hang on, Mark. Howie Klein from downwithtyranny.com has been going through the pain of watching tonight's GOP debate. He wanted to check in, or I wanted him to check in, to let us know the highlights, lowlights, or who screwed up the most. So our buddy Howie Klein joins us very quickly. Hey, Howie, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thanks, Brad. Nice to see you. Nice to talk to you, I mean.
Good to talk to you. Yeah, you're not seeing me today. You're not in the studio today. But you're cranky. Did you sit through all 2 hours of that debate?
I did. I at least listened to the whole thing. I can't look at those people. But it's on in the other room, and I'm sitting and tweeting away, and I heard every word of it and tweeted it.
Yeah? How did it go?
It went as expected. I mean, you know, a couple of days ago, someone told me on the radio said there are literally 20 more of these debates, and they're kind of sad. I mean, does it count as a real debate if Michelle Bachmann doesn't start screaming about Obamacare at least a few months? But this one was about national security again.
Right.
And it's kind of sad. I mean, none of them know anything about national security. You know, I mean, this is a crowd where that makes a crackpot like Ron Paul look like he's a sane, rational person. Huntsman doesn't even belong on the same stage with the rest of these clowns. They're all pathetic. So who made the biggest boo-boo? Now they're calling him the winner of tonight's debate.
Who?
Newt Gingrich is being called the winner, but he seemed to make a big boo-boo. Remember, the beginning of the decline of Rick Perry was when he said something about how Republicans who want to send everybody back or who don't agree with letting Latino students go to school.
Right. He had his own version of the DREAM Act.
You know, they're heartless.
That they don't have a heart, right.
Well, Newt Gingrich said something like that tonight. He said no one is serious. No one would be serious if they want to send back people that have been here for a couple of decades. He said, some of these people have been our neighbors and they have gone to churches. Well, he's right, except he's not describing the Republican base. They do want to send people back. They want to send everybody back. They want to send 14 million people back to wherever they came from. And if Newt Gingrich doesn't understand that, I don't know what kind of a historian he is, but that was the beginning of the end for Rick Perry, and I think it's going to be the beginning of the end for Newt Gingrich as well.
Really? You got a sense that that the folks heard that and that the way – yeah, because I was actually surprised after that debate where Perry said, oh, you don't have a heart if you don't want to put these kids to school. And he was talking about, I think, kids who actually are legal here because they were born here, but their parents were – do I remember that correctly, that their parents were illegal?
I'm talking about them and people brought their infant children here as well.
Right. Oh, okay. So they were brought here as infants, and he said, "You don't have a heart if you don't want to put them, through school. We either help them now, or we're going to pay for it later, in the jail system or the legal system and so forth."
And he was completely correct.
Yeah.
And he'd be right in terms of most Americans, but this is, remember, you're not dealing with most Americans. You're dealing with this insane little Republican base who votes in the Republican primaries, and that's why that was the end of his campaign.
It destroyed him. It absolutely destroyed him. And I didn't even see that coming. I had no idea that his polls would start dropping. So you're predicting, or people are actually saying on CNN now that they think this might come to cost Newt in the morning.
Immediately on Twitter.
Yeah.
I just heard on CNN that Michelle Bachmann, or whoever runs her campaign for her, immediately sent out a press release to that effect as well, reminding people that Newt Gingrich is opening the door to amnesty.
Okay. Yes, amnesty. All right. So that's that you think, you predict, that's the big highlight, where there was no other notable gaffes or fights. Ron Paul.
There was one, but I mean, who cares what Rick Perry says, but anymore, since he's so out of it. But
Santorum, did Santorum punch anybody in the face or anything like that?
He was pretty well ignored.
Okay.
Rick Perry said something that was insane about a no-fly zone over Syria, and I don't think he understands that a no-fly zone means you shoot down airplanes. That I mean, Rick Perry is an idiot, and actually Mitt kind of made fun of him and said maybe there should be a no-drive zone because they have 500 tanks. But that was one of the highlights tonight, the no-fly zone over Syria. Even these Republicans, all of them kind of agree that Rick Perry is insane.
Well, listen, I don't think Howie Klein, speaking with Howie Klein from Down With Tyranny, I don't, these predictions, I think predictions are complete and utter nonsense. That said, Howie, what's your prediction? Who's going to end up winning this clown car circus?
Well, I don't think there was ever any doubt that the nominee would be Rick Perry. He will be the nominee. You could have said that on the first day of this silliness.
Wait, you mean Mitt Romney?
I do mean Mitt Romney.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry, not Rick Perry. He won't be anything. So it's really like more of a question of who is going to be Mitt Romney's vice presidential nominee.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think it was anybody on that stage today.
Really?
I would think they would all like that. But I think he's shrewd enough to run from these crazy people.
So Mitt Romney wins and chooses a vice president who is not on that stage. That's your prediction.
He'll pick some white bread candidate like Mitch Daniels or something like that, or that fat governor of New Jersey. I can't remember his name.
Chris Christie.
Yeah, thank you, Chris Christie.
All right. Okay, Howie Klein, what's your Twitter name there? You're Down With Tyranny over on?
Down With Tyranny, yep. @DownWithTyranny, that's me.
And at DownWithTyranny.com. Hey, Howie, thanks. I appreciate the quick update on that, and sorry you had to sit through that for 2 hours.
No problem. I'm going to get dinner.
Go get it, brother. All right. Take care. Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com. Whole bunch. Mike Malloy Show straight ahead. Stay with us. Welcome back to your Mike Malloy Show. As Occupation Nation continues, 22 minutes after the hour, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight. Please stop on by BradBlog.com. Consider buying a copy of Imagine Politique. You won't be sorry that you did, and you will be supporting progressive radio, progressive journalism, blogging, troublemaking, and muckraking, and all the rest. Okay, we got a call here from Mark Teller Canfield in Seattle, and Desi has up on the call screen that Mike asked him to call in. Now, I don't know if, we'll find out here. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Malloy Show, sir. Did Mike Malloy actually ask you to call in, or is that, did you just crack the code on how to move straight to the top of the line here, sir?
No, actually, I think the last time I talked to him was the night that I got pepper sprayed along with Doyle Rainey.
Oh, brother.
Up in Seattle. I had a sort of a hoarse voice, but I talked anyway, and he asked me to keep him updated and call back in and let him know what was going on.
Thank you. So, I'm glad you did. You're with the Occupy Seattle Media Group and Huffington yes. Post, I see. And so I'm sorry you were pepper sprayed along with Doyle Rainey and with Jennifer Fox, who we are told was the 19-year-old Occupy Seattle protester who was 3 months pregnant at the time of the pepper spraying about 10 days ago. And we learned today that apparently she had a miscarriage, which she says, at least, that the doctors attribute to the pepper spray, to being kicked by cops in the stomach and so forth. So what do you have any new news on that, Mark?
Well, she's in the process of getting those medical records from Harborview Hospital here in mm-hmm. Seattle. And the video is definitely out there on the web, as you probably know, so it's pretty easy for people to see.
Yeah.
What's disconcerting to me is that we had actually, the night that Durley and Jennifer were pepper sprayed was a peaceful demonstration. I was there too, and it was also pepper sprayed. A couple days later, we actually marched to the police department and demanded that we be a part of the review of the Office for Professional Accountability, the Civilian Police Review Board, in order to be in on this investigation and find out who is giving the orders here in Seattle to use pepper spray on nonviolent peaceful demonstrators. Because, using pepper spray on 84-year-old women like Durley Rainey
yeah.
and on Jennifer, who's a good friend of mine, by the way, my heart goes out to her.
Yeah.
this is a tragedy, and it shouldn't be happening. And we're hoping that across the United States and all of these cities that people will go to their city council, go to their mayors, go to the police department and demand accountability. I mean, we really do need to take our issues to the people that are making those decisions and put pressure on them, because anybody who's out in the street trying to practice their First Amendment right to freedom of speech and assembly, or even people who are practicing nonviolent civil disobedience, don't deserve to be tortured and don't just deserve to have rubber bullets fired at them or tear gas canisters or pepper spray. People know that they're breaking the law if they're sitting in the street and that they will be arrested, but they do not expect to be assaulted by police. That's not what they want, and that's not, I hope, what the police departments around the country want.
And this is exactly what it is. It is assault, and I'm glad you used the word torture, because what we saw happen certainly at UC Davis, that to me was a blatantly just torture against those kids by those cops. Were you doing anything? I mean, we know that up in Oakland, the police chief lied about rocks and bottles being thrown at them before they fired tear gas against peaceful demonstrators. That was a lie. We showed that at bradblog.com. The police chief down at UC Davis blatantly lied about the reasons the cops used the pepper spray. What is the ostensible reason? I've only got about a minute here at best, Mark Taylor Canfield. What is the reason that the cops gave when they pepper sprayed you and 84-year-old Dorley Rainey and Jennifer Fox and so forth? What was their excuse?
They were trying to, quote, clear the intersection, and people at that point had already pretty much made the decision that they were leaving the intersection anyway. I had been involved in that demonstration, and I was actually on the sidewalk when I got pepper sprayed. So in my individual case, I was not breaking any laws at the time. It was just a way to disperse the crowd and to stop the protest, and they need to understand that it's only giving the protests more publicity and bringing more people to support. And by the way, in Seattle, our encampment is under threat right now of being evicted from Seattle Central Community College. So I wanted to let people across the country know that we have 140 tents there. We're one of the largest occupations in the country, and we are now under duress, just like folks in Zuccotti Park and people in Oakland and all over the rest of the country.
Thanks, Mark. I got to get to a hard break here. Follow Mark's reports at MTC, that's MTSEA, on Twitter. Thanks for keeping up the occupation out there, Mark, and thanks for checking in. Greatly appreciated, sir.
Thank you, Brad.
All right, we're going to be back with Jeannie Dean. More occupation on The Molloy Show right now.
Smile awake you when you rise. Sleep pretty, darling.
Welcome back to the Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, occupying your public airwaves tonight and tomorrow night, when we will be joined tomorrow night, by the way, by the lovely Catherine Cryer, of formerly of CNN and of Court TV, formerly a federal judge. I loves Catherine Cryer. Can't wait to talk to her tomorrow night. And, well, I've been going back and forth with a few other people. I don't want to give anything away. We'll see who else we may have tomorrow night. Or maybe you'll just have me. Get used to it. How bad could that be? Okay, what other business? Tonight's show is sponsored by Imagine Politique, a political thriller which has election fraud at its very core, and actually features a character named Brad Friedman, who gives it straight to the president-elect, the independent progressive president-elect, I should add, in a three-way race. And by the way, we don't want to give too much about the book away, but it portends Occupy Wall Street. It has to do with a lot of uprisings and a lot of people around this country. So it's just in time for Christmas. So go to bradblog.com, buy yourself a signed copy there, and support us all. Okay. What do we got? That's it. Okay. Now we can get on with our business. Stop by thebradblog.com chat room. Tweet us at thebradblog. Joining me now is, speaking of lovely, the lovely Jeannie Dean, a longtime a friend of the Brad blog, certainly a great election integrity activist across this nation. I mean, have camera, will travel. That's kind of Jeannie Dean's...
That's my motto.
It is, man. From Florida to New Hampshire, now out here in L.A.
Where, and Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin,
and
thank you.
Have both been working together to
right.
track all of the hooey.
Hooey indeed. But now, for the moment, your attention has been turned to the Occupy movement. I know you've been spending a lot of time out at Occupy L.A.
Yes, I have.
Where, and you've been paying attention, unlike the rest of the world who's paying no attention to Occupy L.A., because... It's just all going too well. Everybody's being nice to them.
I have been told that from several media people that because we're not getting maced in the face on a regular basis, we're not really all that news.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, why the hell couldn't other city councils around the country have figured this out? The L.A. City Council immediately came out, met you guys the very first, I think, the first day or two, passed resolution, right?
There is a responsible support. Banking measure. That's right. That's been, and they declared open support for Occupy L.A. and for our encampment. And even though we don't have a permit, we haven't had a permit. We got a permit for our PA, but we've never had a permit for the encampment, and they have been completely
your
gracious.
PA, you mean your PA system?
I'm sorry, yes, the PA system.
Okay. So you guys don't need to use the people's mic. You've
we
got
are
an
now
actual
using
mic.
The people mic, and you know what? That's been a very contentious issue. It's been interesting to see how the PA system has affected our general collective versus the human mic, which I personally... happened to a door.
Really? You like the people's mic?
I heard your Obama people's mic.
Did you see the people's mic came to Obama?
I just heard that, thanks to you, earlier this evening, but I've watched the people's mic check on Michelle Bachmann, which gave me endless joy. I won't go into the details of how I enjoyed that. That's right.
The best one was actually...
Scott Walker.
Exactly. That was beautiful. In Chicago, when Occupy Chicago came and visited Scott Walker, the perfect mic check.
Wasn't it, Brad? And but I really think that mic check may be one of the most glorious things to come out of this movement thus far.
But I'm confused. I thought these protesters, I thought they were all Obama supporters. I thought they were all lefties. They were leftists. They're unions. It's a secret move to elect Obama. And yet they showed up. And people's and mic checked Barack Obama.
And you can hear Barack Obama supporters in the background, which I heard for the first time, shouting them down.
I know. It's very interesting. Yeah. I'm so confused.
But we're all such a bunch of lefties.
You are. Yeah. Now, you lefties got along with the L.A. City Council, nobody paid attention to you, which other city councils may have taken note, you know. Hasn't really been a problem, except now, the L.A. City Council starting to get a little tired of the occupiers on their lawn, their work. Worried it's going to hurt the grass, it seems? Is that
There are some ecological issues and some concerns about that. But and that is, of course, sort of the line that is being towed.
Right.
And yet we're still getting incredible support. And there are, there are all kinds of relationships blossoming as a result of their support from us, of us originally.
And one of these things that have blossomed, some news today, that the L.A. City Council has actually made an offer to L.A., Occupy L.A., to get the hell off of our lawn.
Interesting.
And
we are not negotiating to get off of City Hall property.
Okay.
We very much want to maintain a presence there.
What the L.A. City Council is offering you, Occupy L.A., for $1 a year.
Yes.
A lease, if I understand this correctly, of 10,000 square feet of office space in an office building, right?
That is, it's a very dense, it's still sort of, I can't speak to the legalities of the various options in play.
Right.
But yes, that is being discussed. I don't know about the 10,000 square feet
That's
aspect,
what was reported
and we're not sure.
In the LA Times.
Okay.
And as you know, L.A. Times is never wrong.
Solid.
So 10,000 square feet of office space for the occupiers, plus a farmland you can grow your own food.
Isn't that something?
It's quite amazing.
Isn't it?
So how are the occupiers reacting to this? Well, are they going to take this offer? Or what's going on with this?
Well, it remains to be seen. It's still very much a work in progress. There's a drafting proposal. And, of course, everything at any Occupy has to be passed through the General Assembly.
Right.
So that is the work in progress that's happening right now. So we have National Guild lawyers, and we have people who have been organizers from the very beginning who are all working towards those ends.
Now, yeah, I think Jim Lafferty had negotiated for the National Lawyers Guild, and some folks are kind of upset that he is taking a leadership role when they say, well, wait a minute, we have no leaders. We weren't in on these negotiations.
That's correct.
Okay.
I can speak to that.
You can.
Oh,
please do.
A little bit. Well, here's the story, and this seems to be a problem that's happening from occupation to occupation. There's rollover. So you don't necessarily get the same people at every GA, right?
Right,
you have
right.
a lot of part-time occupiers, and you have a lot of campers that aren't necessarily participating in the GAs on a nightly basis, despite the growing numbers.
Right.
So as a result, there is some ground communication issues, which result in a lot of rumor. And this happens, I'm told, and I've been on all of the InterOccupy, you know, phone calls to sort of verify. This seems to be pretty typical.
Mm-hmm.
So ground communications are really key in terms of sort of metting out how these things are proposed to the GA.
Okay.
So that's been complicated because a lot of folks, and I can explain
the conflict. What's the upshot? Do they are they mad at him for making this deal? Are they against the deal? Are they supporting this deal?
Well, it's
and will they have to leave the lawn at City Hall? So even if they take this deal, they get that and they get to stay on the lawn?
The idea would be to maintain a presence at City Hall and also expand. So we maybe take the north side of City Hall and then move into various occupies or various other places where we can self-sustain because we are huge. We have 700 tents.
Really?
We have 700 tents, Brad.
700 tents out
and
there.
And 450 tents and about 700 occupies.
And does the City Hall know that when they're offering you this deal for 10,000 square feet of office for a dollar and farmland, do they know that you're thinking about taking that and staying at City Hall, or do they think they're getting rid of you?
No, well, they would all of the negotiations have been, as far as I know, and I'm speaking entirely for myself and not for Occupy LA, that is the Occupy disclaimer that I needed to say right up front. But no, the idea would be that we maintain a presence at City Hall and be able to get the office space, get a building maybe. We're looking at perhaps a foreclosed building. That would be a great opportunity for the City Hall and the LA municipalities and LAPD to support us in terms of the responsible banking measure. So these are all things that we're negotiating in addition to maybe maintaining the north part of the lawn and various other grounds and parks in the downtown area. So this is an expansion, and this is we really want a building, Brad. We want office space so we can have Wi-Fi, so we can be a model for all the other occupiers as to how you negotiate with city council and how a city council that's open to us might respond.
You have been so far, no doubt. Let me check in with Arturo, who I think is someone you asked to call in.
I did.
Who's been at Occupy UCLA, I think, as well as Occupy LA.
And he's one of our facilitators. He's fantastic.
Okay, and he's been keeping track of the pros and cons and the way people are feeling about this on the ground. Hey, Arturo, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Oh, hi. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. I really appreciate your calling in here. How has this proposal been taken so far by the folks on the ground? What are the upsides? What are the downsides of this?
Well, I guess I want to start by saying that we have a division of labor that is pretty similar to every other occupation, you know, every other occupy.
Right.
You know, in every city. And I guess, you know, there is, you know, we have a media team, we have a facilitation team, we have police liaison. Some of the difficulties and the growing pains we've been going through is being able to, you know, trust each other and being able to, you know, actually be comfortable with people, you know, either making executive decisions or being trusted to bring back information to the entire group.
Right.
And all that. So in many ways, you know, this was an inevitability, not a plan and not an offer. What I mean is that we would have to negotiate with the city. And that's why, you know, some people at Occupy LA took it upon themselves to talk to the police.
And you guys have had a very good relationship. You guys have had a very good relationship with the police as well as the city, right? And so,
yes, very positive.
So it was inevitable that somebody would just sort of take the initiative to go out and talk to some folks and begin to discuss an idea like this.
Right.
So what has the reaction been, Arturo?
The reaction has been pretty mixed. You know, of course, there's people that said finally somebody took up, you know, some sort of leadership role. And of course, you know, there's the other side of the spectrum, you know, that, you know, I thought we weren't going to negotiate. You know, I don't like that you're negotiating on my behalf. But the reality is that, you know, would there ever be, you know, a dream team that you could, you know, send off to, you know, to negotiate? And I understand that, you know, there's a democratic process, but even though, like, some of our committees have been democratically elected, there's still a lot of tension. And so I think that there, what's happened is that, you know, in spite of, you know, I feel like the people that took initiative didn't want to go through that tension and were more comfortable, you know, taking the fallout.
Well, it's it seems to me, and you know, if there's some other occupiers out there who around the country who want to ring in on this, it seems it's an interesting question because you guys have been trying to do everything by consensus, but can you actually do anything by consensus? Can anything actually get done by consensus? And I suspect all of the occupations, the folks I've talked to, they're all having similar issues, but at some point we need to move forward. And we need to make these decisions and perhaps make these demands. Jeannie, hold your thought, because I want to get to a quick break here. We'll get back to your thoughts on this. And moving the occupation forward, you know, making decisions, making demands, stuff that needs to happen. We're going to talk about that when we come back.
Oh, I've got so much to say about it.
I bet you do. Jeannie Dean is with us.
Thanks, Arturo.
Arturo is also with us. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Stay tuned. Much more straight ahead.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
I won't back down. I don't think these occupiers are going to back down. That's not the American spirit. We don't back down. Glad you could join us on the Mike Malloy Show, 52 minutes after the hour. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Jeannie Dean, who, by the way, Jeannie, you were great on Russian TV, RT, over the weekend. Great job singing the gospel of the Occupy.
Thank you so
very
much.
Well done. Also, Arturo is on the line with us here. Both Arturo and Jeannie Dean from Occupy LA, talking about this city council deal that is being worked out. City council has been very supportive of Occupy LA and has made an offer, apparently, to let you guys go from expand from the city hall to a 10,000 square foot office building, a working farm to grow your food.
All of the 10,000 square foot still much in play, the farm still much in play, but yes, the idea would be able to. They've been very supportive, and the idea would be able to expand. We've got huge numbers, so we could spare them some of the ecological damage you were talking earlier if we at least can expand to other.
No, I didn't say ecological. I said get off my lawn.
Yeah, that's
been the. That's the ecological.
I'm going to keep your ball. Get off my lawn.
That's it. You kids, get off my lawn. By the way, we're going to take your calls. Don't know if we're going to get them in this hour or not, but next hour for sure, 877-520-1150 on this topic or any other on your public airwaves. So get in line now. All right, we're talking about the difficulty of organizing this group by consensus.
That's right.
And Arturo, both Jeannie Dean and Arturo, you guys have spoken with other occupiers around the country. They're having the similar problem as far as making decisions, moving forward, choosing demands and how to move the ball forward.
That's correct. But, you know, this process, it's direct democracy. It's very slow and it can be very frustrating, but every now and then you find incredible consensus upon, you find the common ground between your Ron Paul people and your LaRouche people and your Skid Row people, and those are glorious moments.
Arturo, can a group like this make decisions? Can you guys make a decision, for example, on this city council deal? And can you narrow your demands, or do you even want to narrow demands to a specific demand?
Right. That's the million-dollar question, and those are the sub-points to the million-dollar question. I think, well, first of all, I think that if New York City and Oakland had actually let the occupiers stay, we would know if we can actually come together as a community, because, you know, it's not like the people who are occupying are, you know, not from where they claim they are. You know, these are community members that are, you know, engaging in their civic, you know, duty and in their civic role. You know, I think the fact that, you know, we can see how the Congress functions, its dysfunction, you know, has really disgusted a lot of people, and that's why they want to bring it out to the town square. As to whether or not, you know, people can make decisions by consensus, it's a difficult process, but again, like, you know, just to piggyback off of Jeannie, you know, we have had those moments where, like, yeah, we all agree, you know, that
we have.
Well, for one, that we're going to stay here, you know, for as long as we can, and two, that we're here, you know, to respect each other, to respect everybody's diversity, to be, you know, fully engaged, you know, in the political process, and I think that's where it's going. You know, having more of an input as to what is prioritized in society.
Very quickly, because we're coming up to the end of the hour here, so I'll take a 5-second answer from each of you.
Sure.
Do you see it with your own eyes as you're there? Is the process moving forward? It may be slow to a lot of people out there who are impatient and want them to do some damn thing, but is the thing moving forward?
I'll take it first, if you don't mind, Arturo. I believe it is. I think we're seeing some real changes and some real progress locally and nationally as a result of our efforts on behalf of Occupy.
And your thoughts, Arturo, in 10 seconds?
Definitely moving forward. If you were to say, you know, if you were to ask me at the very beginning, will we be, you know, in at day 52, I would have said probably not. So we are definitely, you know, moving forward. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. We end it with a good note here. Thank you both. Thank you, Jeannie Dean, for being here tonight, helping us out in many ways.
Thank you for all your work.
And to Arturo, thank you guys for holding down the fort, as it literally is these days.
Our pleasure, Brad.
All right.
You're welcome.
You bet. Your call straight ahead, 877-520-1150. And even Desi Doyen may join us with some green news. So stay tuned. Another big hour straight ahead.